Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of December 21st through 28th. This is our Christmas issue, so this is our Christmas podcast, and we wish all the best to our listeners. And we have with us this week Father Larry Snyder, the president of Catholic Charities USA. Father Snyder talked about the needs his organization is seeing around the country as we enter the second year of a difficult economic time. Our conversation took place here in the offices of America House in New York. Father Snyder, maybe we can just talk, since this is around the Christmas season when we're having this conversation. This is the second Christmas during this, what has been called the Great Recession. What are you seeing as, you know, in Catholic Charities, what are you seeing as the needs around the country at this moment?
When the economic collapse happened last fall at its worst, we decided somebody needs to chronicle what's going on actually in the local communities. So we began what we called a snapshot survey. And with that, we send out a questionnaire to all of our agencies, and we have agencies in all 50 states and territories of the United States, and ask them to tell us what are they seeing, what kind of increases in need, and basically what are the challenges they're facing. Well, we've just published our fourth snapshot survey, which would be the fall quarter of this year, 2009. And what I could say is in the last year, our agencies have seen a dramatic increase in the numbers of people coming to them, particularly for food, but also for help with mortgages, for shelter. When I say dramatic, I mean increases of like 100%. Wow. So it's pretty telling. At the same time, what they're saying is they are seeing a cutback on government funding to basic needs. And so this is becoming a more difficult challenge for them. At the very time when the needs are greatest, some of their resources are drying up. And I guess just an anecdotal thing, which we've heard from many, many of our sites, is that people who used to volunteer at our sites distributing food, handing out food in a food line or with groceries, are now on the other end receiving. And it's a very humiliating thing for them. So if you were to ask me about the greatest need that we have in responding, it's not only to providing those basic needs, but it's also to giving people hope in this time where I think hope is severely challenged across the country.
Well, this, you mentioned the snapshot report, which we're looking at right now, and you can get this on the Catholic Charities website, which is CatholicCharitiesUSA.org. And just a couple little statistics that might help people understand. 76% of your agencies report an increased demand for food, 70% increased enrollment in food stamps programs. Are there certain parts of the country that you see are being affected in worse ways than others?
Well, I think certainly one of the major driving forces in this need is the loss of jobs. So you see that in cities especially, where companies are closing, have failed, whatever, layoffs, and you know the unemployment rate being over 10% nationally. We're seeing that in cities a lot. That people who had very decent jobs now are struggling to figure out how do you make it with either very limited income now or no income. So that's one segment. But the other segment that we can't lose sight of is the rural areas. And the rural areas frequently get forgotten because there aren't many people out there who are standing up as their spokesperson. But so it's more of a quiet need out there, but it is definitely there as well.
Another area that your Catholic Charities has been working on, you had, a conference recently where you set up the goal to see if it's possible to reduce poverty by half. I believe it's in 10 years by 2020. Is that the goal? It seems ambitious, especially during these economic times. You think that's doable?
Well, we set up that goal actually in 2007. We produced a policy paper on poverty in America. In fact, it was called Poverty in America, A Threat to the Common Good. And we presented that to our membership, and they so overwhelmingly endorsed it that they said, this has to be the guiding force of our movement, the Catholic Charities movement in this country, for at least until we can get this done. So we set a quantifiable goal, 50% by the year 2020. We wanted to be realistic in both of those quantifiable pieces. And back when we set this goal, in 2007, 2008, poverty was about 12% in this country. And the fact of the matter is, there are people who say, we can't do this. But if you look at the poverty rate in the United States in 1958, it was 22%. In 1971, it was 11%. We cut it by 10%. We cut it in half. It is doable. Now, there were a lot of things that were going on in the 60s, a lot of turbulent things, but there were a lot of good things where people had the political will. There was a social movement that said poverty at 22% in the United States, the richest country in the world, is not acceptable morally. So they did something about it. I think we're at another one of those times in our history where if we can garner the political will, we can make another one of those huge initiatives that have impact in the level of poverty. Obviously, since 2008, we have seen that rate grow and grow dramatically, and it will continue to grow from all indications for at least another year. We're not discouraged about that because along with great challenges come great opportunities. I think it is a chance for Americans to evaluate how, in fact, our systems are set up, our social systems. If we only have as a goal to come out of this recession with where we were before the recession, then I think we're missing a huge opportunity. What we have to say is this is a time for us to really right some of the inequalities that we were living with before. And 12% of our population in poverty is one of those things that we need to right. Our strategy is first of all to garner the political will. That's one thing about the American people is when we have the will to do something, we can do just about anything. We're working on that on a national level, but at the same time, we're trying to encourage our associates throughout the country to convene local groups who can look at poverty in a local context, because poverty is different in every community. It's different here in Manhattan than it is in Wichita, Kansas. So that there's not one solution that's going to fit all. And the other thing about poverty is that it's not monolithic. It's not this one barrier that people can say, if I can just get over that poverty barrier. There's multiple barriers that people have to get over to get out of poverty. And we've identified like five of them that we think are critical. And the interesting thing is those five barriers really pretty much line up with the corporal works of mercy. So it's something that we find really exhilarating as a Catholic organization, that the needs that we have right now are so aligned with the gospel mandates. On a local level, let me go back just to say that again. What we're asking our agencies to do is to convene communities. So this is not Catholic Charities solving the United States problems. It's Catholic Charities advocating and calling together people of goodwill to work together to have a definite impact. So we're asking them to look at those five areas in their communities, and there is data that's available on the human development indicators that have been developed and is tied to the census, so that we can go down to a congressional district, we can go down to a county, and we can tell you what the real barriers are for people. And we're saying, pull people, local people together, have them establish a local plan, and let that local plan address the most critical needs in that community. If I could give one example of where it's worked, I would go to San Jose, California, where this was our first agency to really do this. Basically, they worked, they drew people together, got a commitment, and they worked, and a year later they announced an initiative called Step Up Silicon Valley, in which the community leaders made this promise that they were going to actually address this with resources and work together. Now, it's no longer seen as a Catholic Charities initiative. If you look, it's headed up by the mayor of San Jose and the bishop. But then a lot of other community players, you have to kind of dig to see Catholic Charities in there. But we were the driving force, and that's the way it should be.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned the 60s when there was, as you said, this political movement. I mean, the War on Poverty, the Great Society, this effort to bring a certain level of livelihood to all Americans. But it sounds like from what you're describing that the local efforts might be more effective. I mean, politically, do you think the federal government can do this, or is it up to the state governments, or is it a mixed response?
Well, I think the federal government has got to be a part of it. They are the only ones with adequate resources to make have a huge impact in this. Unless we have them on board, we're going to be making little, it could be like death by a thousand needles, you know, rather than looking at and diagnosing the whole patient. So we've got to work and have impact there. And I think from our conversations with people on Capitol Hill, there is interest. What we have to do is convince them that their constituency is behind them on this as well.
A question that might be of interest to our listeners is, you mentioned that Catholic Charities has these relationships. You mentioned in San Jose with the mayor. How does it work in various, obviously Washington, D.C. was in the news recently, the case there where the Catholic Charities provide certain services to the poor, and that became an issue with some political proposals before the city council regarding to gay marriage. How does it work in other areas? How does Catholic Charities forge these relationships with non-Catholic agencies or government groups?
Well, from the history, from the beginning of this country, Catholic Charities, the Catholic Church, has worked within the political system to further the values that we have. And I think while that may have been done more on the social service side up until the 1960s, once we saw Vatican II, then it became a much more overt thing that we didn't have to kind of apologize for what we were doing, that it became a part of who we are as Catholics and when we could be proud of that. But from the very beginnings, it's been true. I'm always amazed when Catholics, and when I used to be head of Catholic Charities in St. Paul, Minneapolis, I would occasionally get letters from Catholics saying, I just found out that you took government funding. How can you do this? Because this is tainted money. Well, I mean, I don't know where they're coming from, because, I mean, it's our money. It's, you know, we are the government, ultimately. But they don't realize that these partnerships are not new. They go back to our very beginning. And I look at the first federal grant that was given to a nonprofit was established in 1872. And it was a grant given to the Little Sisters of the Poor in Washington, D.C. to care for the senior citizens there. That was the first federal grant given to a nonprofit. Since that time, our relationship with the government has grown, so much so that when you look at Catholic Charities across the country today, about 65% of our funding comes from some government source. There's a recognition here, I think, of a couple things. First of all, that the government cannot do this alone. And second of all, that faith-based organizations, Catholic Charities, I think, being a prime example, are, in fact, rooted in the community, in the local community. So we know the needs, and we have the credibility. And therefore, there is an intersection of our Christian vocation and the government. Obviously, there's a debate about what is the role of government, and a lot of people in Washington say, well, it's national security. Well, that's a piece of it, but that's a small piece. I think in our faith tradition, we say that the role of government is to provide for the common good, especially for those who are marginalized. And I think there is a recognition from a lot of people in government that our two missions intersect and work very well together that way. Now, having said that, obviously, there are certain parameters within which Catholic Charities operates, which are defined by our faith. We cannot operate outside those parameters. Throughout most of our history in this country, where, in fact, I mean, our mission has always been to serve the poor. For a fair amount of time in our history, that was serving Catholics, because as an immigrant church, and we were primarily an immigrant church for most of our history, we were the poor. That's not true anymore. I mean, there's certainly many immigrants who are Catholic, but the Catholic Church, by and large, is not identified as the poor in this country. But what we have here, then, is the church serving the community, local community, by serving the poor, and the government saying, you know, we need to fund these efforts because it's part of our responsibility, too. We've always had an understanding that the government will respect the parameters of our faith. Now, there's a development, I think, now, as we see the government redefining civil liberties, it sometimes then comes into conflict with religious liberty. What we have to do here is to see if there is common ground, and if there's not, then Catholic Charities will have to pull away from that contract. And that's the other thing. When you enter into a contract with the government, it's not like they can dictate everything to you. You both have to agree to the terms. And if the terms are not agreeable, you walk away. You don't sign that. But sometimes you may have a contract with the government, and if the government redefines those terms, then you have to reevaluate how you can operate or if you can operate within those terms. We've seen it happen across the country before, and that in some places they have, in fact, been able to find common ground. It's not been without a struggle, and we're seeing that struggle right now in Washington, D.C. I'm hopeful, and I pray that there will be common ground that is found, because obviously Catholic Charities of Washington, D.C. is the largest provider of services to the homeless, to the poor in that city, and it would be very unfortunate if that partnership with the city were not able to move on.
Well, you talk about some of the history of Catholic Charities. One of the reasons you're here is that it's the 100th anniversary of the organization, and as you were describing, that in some ways the mission has changed from the early days, where perhaps it's mostly Catholics you were serving, so now you're serving a variety of folks. What are things have changed from the founding years to today?
Well, you know, it might be easier to say what things haven't changed and start with that.
Sure.
And we trace the history of Catholic social services in this country to the year 1727, so some 282 years ago, when 12 Ursuline sisters from Paris landed in New France in the city of New Orleans and immediately set up an orphanage, a hospital, a school, and an outreach to prostitutes. And in that, I think we see the germ of Catholic social ministry as it develops in this country. Throughout our history then, we developed diocese by diocese or religious congregation by religious congregation performing these services. It wasn't until 1910 that we actually formed a national conference of Catholic Charities. And the interesting thing to me there is that we were the third nation in the world to do that. Germany was the first in the late 1890s, followed by Switzerland, followed by the United States. So we were on the cutting edge of that movement. And so today we belong to a group that's called Caritas Internationalis, which is under the umbrella of the Vatican, and is on 162 national conferences of charities. And most throughout the world, other than the United States and a few other countries, it's called Caritas, or the Latin word for charity. So in 1910, there were a couple of burning issues that people felt could only be addressed on a national level. And one was the need for professionalization of our services. Up until that time, they were delivered primarily on a volunteer level. And basically people were saying, if we're going to have the credibility within the community, as we start to serve other people than Catholics, we have to show that we are as professional and committed to this as ever. So that has, when you look at our development, that has been one of the constants that we keep reminding ourselves of. And in fact, we have several initiatives that were founded by us in order to ensure that. The other was the convening role. So who brings us all together so that we can not only be nurtured by a common vision, but also share best practices and expertise and problems, challenges. And so that is something that became a role of the national office back in 1910. But perhaps the most telling thing was that the last thing that the charter called us to do was to be the attorney for the poor. Now, attorney in the best sense of the word, that it is someone who speaks on behalf of those who have no voice for themselves. And so advocacy has been a huge piece of what we have done. And that began right away in Washington with the first, what was called then, Executive Secretary, Monsignor Kirby, who immediately established relations both with the White House and Congress to work on many issues, especially issues after the First World War, about how could charities respond to the men who were coming back and the issues that families were experiencing besides that. And the second General Secretary was Monsignor O'Grady, and he actually served for 40 years and was a phenomenal person with a great vision. He established very strong working relationships with the White House and primarily President Roosevelt, because he was the person who was helping to craft America's response to the Depression. I think it's widely acclaimed that Monsignor O'Grady was one of the chief authors of the Social Security Act. So all these things have happened throughout our history that we have, in fact, been a voice on Capitol Hill. And I think a voice with a lot of credibility because we're one of the few organizations in Washington that has a direct constituency with direct services being provided. There's a lot of think tanks, there's a lot of trade associations that don't really have the direct access that we do. All of those things are things that we build upon now, and we're looking at the centennial not so much as a way to celebrate what's gone on in the past, but certainly to acknowledge it and to acknowledge the vision and the faith of the people who have brought us where we're at. But really, it's our opportunity to launch ourselves into the future, into the next century.
Well, finally, maybe we can just talk about bring it back again to the Christmas season when people, Catholics, are getting a lot of appeals for donations, et cetera. And obviously, this is a time when people are struggling and maybe not have as much to give as they have in previous years. What can, you know, a Catholic offer that's meaningful to Catholic charities? Obviously, a check would help. What else can Catholics do or others who want to support your work?
Well, I think you're correct there. I mean, obviously, the need for resources right now is very great. And so I don't want to discount that because, and I also find that at times like this, people are very generous. Americans are very generous people. So, you know, we're grateful for that. At the same time, I think you raise a good point. There is more that can be done. You can't just, you know, write a check to Catholic Charities and say, okay, I've done my part. And if anybody has made that point very clear, it's our Holy Father, Pope Benedict, in his first encyclical, Deus Caritas Est, where he says, you know, what are the three hallmarks of the Church? And it's preaching the Word, celebrating the sacraments, and serving the poor or serving the needy. If you're not doing all three, then you're leaving out a very large component of the Christian vocation. So I think it's just as important to be involved somehow, some way. We all have unique talents. We all have unique resources. But I think the more we can get involved ourselves, it's one thing to talk about the poor. It's another thing to look into the face of the poor. Conversion doesn't happen by reading a book about the poor. I mean, it can motivate us. But I think true conversion happens when you've actually had an encounter with the poor and seen the face of Christ there, as so many people have shown us, you know, Mother Teresa, Dorothy Day, that great tradition that we have. These are folks who are saying, you know, don't read a book, just go do it. And I think that our agencies are delighted to have the involvement of people. I guess I do want to say, too, that it's not just Catholic Charities when we're talking about this. Because to me, I always say the primary locus of social ministry in the Church is the parish. It's there where most people turn to first when they need help. And it is as a parish that we experience our fundamental identity in that parish community. So as much as I, you know, am a spokesperson and advocate for Catholic Charities, I'm just as strong in saying, you have to be involved in your parish, and the parish has to be involved in social issues of the local community as well as the national and global community as well. So Advent and Christmas is a great time to get involved in that if you're not already there.
Well, Father Snyder, we want to thank you for joining us, and good luck with your work.
Thank you very much, Tim, for the opportunity.
I want to thank you for joining us for the American Magazine podcast. We encourage you to go online where you can see video reflections inspired by classic works of art for the Advent, Christmas, and Epiphany seasons. Those are available at americamagazine.org/video. And of course, we want to wish a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all of our listeners, and we look forward to speaking to you again in the new year. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.